I said, "Fit, can we give it a go?" And yeah, 6 years on, we've turned Mac and Talent from probably turning over $300,000 to just under $16.5 million last year. 150 people globally. We're now in Ireland, the UK, Switzerland, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Vancouver, and 7 states in America, 11 cities.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of the Entrepreneur Experiment Podcast with me, Gary Fox. We're back again with another deep dive interview. And this week we have Mr. Andy Mackin, the founder of the Mackin Group. You really know you mean business when you've got your entire group named after yourself. You know you are a proper entrepreneur. Andy is one of the nicest guys I've met over the course of this entire podcast journey. He also introduced me to meditation, which is something I've been trying to dabble in for the last couple of years and never stuck to it until Andy broke it down for me and gave me kind of good insight into it. So I've gotten to thank him for that already. We recorded this about a month ago and I've really got benefit from it since. So there's your first little tip from today's interview. Andy is just an absolutely fascinating guy. He's got two careers. He was in the Navy for 21 years. We talk about that. He was almost a professional footballer. He almost worked in a 5-star hotel for his career. He did so many things that kind of characterizes so many entrepreneurs. We all love experimenting. We all love trying things out. We all like flopping in a number of different directions. But what is interesting about Andy is that he pursued a career and then another career. And you do find that with a lot of entrepreneurs, including my own dad. He worked in one career and now he's got a second career. So it's definitely a characteristic. People always ask me, what characteristics do I see in entrepreneurs? That's often they will have different chapters and different careers in their lives. Andy breaks that down for us today in a fascinating way. Here's my chat with Mr. Andy Mackin, the founder of the Mackin Group. Andy, welcome to the pod.
How are you, sir?
I am.
It's lovely to talk to you, Gary.
Great. It's absolutely lovely to talk to you. We had a great chat last week, so I'm delighted to be able to do it and share it with everyone this week.
I can't tell you anything we talked about last week.
That's just for my benefit. Andy, tell everyone what you do.
My day job is I'm the CEO and founder of Mackin Group, which basically is two companies. On the left side, we've got an environmental health safety consultancy and training business. And on the right side, we've got a full-scale recruitment and talent business.
My goal in life is to have Fox Group or Fox Industries. Then you know you've met it.
I don't know about that.
Go back.
It sounds good though.
Go back. It sounds unbelievable. Go back to the very start because you've had a life within a life.
Yeah, absolutely. I probably have. Well, I suppose I'll go back to the start. I mean, I'm originally from Dundalk. I'm the eldest of 8 kids. Probably had a normal upbringing in the 60s and 70s, like everybody, happy child. Love school. Probably just wasn't very good at it, but really, really enjoyed it. Got to secondary school and just circumstances at the time. I ended up leaving before I finished my leaving cert. So end of 5th year, kind of start of 6th year, I had to leave to basically help out the family. My father wasn't working full time at the time. And obviously with 8 mouths to feed under kind of 16, it was a kind of chip in and like it was just that was the dumb thing back and I hate using that kind of phrase back in the days, like, but it really was like, I mean, yeah. We didn't have any choice and look, that was fine. Eldest in a family, you have to do that. So I went off and I worked at all different kinds of jobs just to get a few bob together and handed that up. And I had an opportunity to go to England for a soccer trial when I was 18 with Torquay. And I headed on over and it didn't work out. So I said, Dundalk at the time hadn't really any huge opportunities. I wanted to be an electrician actually as a job. And I had applied for all the major factories around the place, so PJ Carroll's, CRV, Harper Lager, and there was loads of industrial kind of factories at the time in the dock, and I didn't get any opportunities there. So went off, did my trial anyway, didn't work out. So I got a job as a silver service waiter in the Grand Hotel in Torquay, and probably one of the best learning experiences that I ever had, dealing with people, the members of the public. And I'll give you a funny story. I didn't mention this last week. I remember I was in the restaurant working one Sunday afternoon and this old English couple came in and said, "Can we have 2 cream teas, please?" And I said, "Absolutely, ma'am, no problem. I'll be with you in a sec." So I went off and I got 2 teas, lobbed a lump of butter into the, or a lob of cream into the 2 teas and brought them back. And she looked horrified at the time. I didn't know a cream tea was like scone jam and cream on the side with your cup of tea.
That'd be keto these days. You were so ahead of it. If you don't develop that now.
Absolutely, yeah, they're doing lattes and everything else. But yeah, it was funny. But yeah, had a great 9 months in the hotel and learned an awful lot just like dealing with the different structures within an organization. Like, you're dealing with the maitre d' in the restaurants, the managers, the owners, and then the members of the public. So it was a good learning curve on how to be courteous, how to treat people. You know, like, my philosophy in life anyway is always treat people like you like to be treated yourself. And I think that has stood the test of time in my career all the way through. So I had applied for the naval service the year before when I was 17, and obviously I was too young and I didn't get it. But whilst I was in England, I got a phone call. Well, I didn't get a phone call, no mobiles. One of the last hotel came home on a Friday and said, "You have to ring home. You're rang up to ring home." So went over the phone box across the road, rang my mother. I said, "You're looking for me." And she goes, "Yeah, you got a note from the Navy. You have to be in Clark's Barracks in Dundalk in 2 weeks for an interview." I said, "Oh, okay." So that was fine. So I did all my bits and pieces and came home for the interview. And I remember the officer who interviewed me at the time, he said, "Look, if you're successful, we'll need you back in about 3 or 4 weeks' time," he said, "because you'll have to go to medicals and a second interview and stuff." And I said, "Look, that's fine." I said, "I absolutely want to do this anyway, so I'll be back." I think that kind of sealed it for him, for me, because I think it was showing my commitment that I really wanted to. And it was a weird. I mean, I watched a John Wayne movie when I was about 12. he was the captain of a U-boat. And I always remember this scene at the end of the movie where the submarine is kind of going along, and it's the silhouette of the moon and the sky behind him, and he goes, "Wouldn't that be really cool now to be on the water like that?" And it obviously just lodged in my head, because I never thought about the Navy or anything like that ever again till I was about 17 when I seen the ad.
I was going to ask you, because it's quite a jump from going from electrician, silver service waiter, the Navy. Like, it's a big transition. Like, what was in your head to do that?
I think for the electrician part of it, I mean, it was probably just my father when we were young. He said, "Look, if you get a trade, you'd be great, because you'll always have opportunities."
Yeah.
So that always lodged in my head as well. And I always thought the electrical part of it would be cool. So that was that. The hotel was kind of circumstances. I mean, it was just like, get a job. I mean, I had to pay rent. Obviously, I was in digs when I went over with a family belonging to the club. But once that 2 week trial period was over, and like, we had about 4 weeks after that, and then it was three or four of us let go. It was like, yeah, you've got to get a flat now or something, or share a room in the house or something, and then you have to pay for it. So I was like, okay, what job can I do? What will I qualify for? And at that time, I was qualified for nothing really. So I got that and got trained up, and she looked, it was great. I really, like I said, I really enjoyed it. And then the Navy just came full circle again. Obviously, that seed had been planted, but like I said, from watching that movie. And when I seen the ad, I said, "Yeah, I didn't get it that time." And then the following year I did. And again, probably one of the best decisions I ever made in my life. It was the start of an adventure that, like, I did 21 years, served 21 years. And we loved every single minute of it. And I would recommend any young fella who hasn't a clue what he wants to do 5 years. Because the way the structure now is, your first contract, I think, is 5 years. Okay. So if you get in at 18, at 23, you've got 5 years military service behind you. You've got a discipline installed in it that you don't think is there, but it actually is. And I've noticed that in my business acumen as my second career, running companies, that discipline was always there. It was just in me. And you definitely pick a lot of those trades up within the naval service. So that was it. So I came back anyway. I got the nod. Came back over to Ireland 4 weeks later, did my second interview, and said, "Yeah, right, you've got your second interview. We're going to do medicals now. Anybody who gets a medical, if you pass the medical, you'll be joining up." And I remember when I came home, I think I was telling you this last week when we chatted, I got a letter from the Department of Defence saying, "Bring an overnight bag for your second interview, because you know you could be staying in the barracks." And I was thinking, you know, the military barracks or the hospital barracks in Park A Street, in Brickett's Hospital. And I had a little letter in my jacket pocket, and we're all excited going up anyway. So I passed the second interview anyway. So after lunch, medical, done the medical. And then he came in around 4 o'clock and he said, "Right, you're following people, you've been selected." And so they called out the name. So my name was called out. We all stepped forward. Guys who didn't make it, exited stage right. We went into another room. And then you get the Bible out, sworn in. And then was on a train at 5 o'clock to Cork. And I said, "Okay." So
you must be obviously no messing around there.
So I got to Cork, then picked up in a minibus, brought to Hull Boland. So we got to Hull Boland Island, where the Naval Service was based. I'd say it was probably around 8 o'clock, half eight. starved, not having eaten really anything from lunchtime. And we were brought down to the galley, and I think there was cold, curled up fish and chips that were just banged into a kind of a grill to heat up. So we scoffed it up anyway. And got in and went to bed. Following morning, got up anyway, and it got kitted out and all the gear. And that was the start of the adventure. But my first, that was the 19th of November, Gary. And my first time home was the 23rd of December. So my one pair of underpants and one pair of socks and my toothbrush.
I was going to ask you. I hope a couple of pairs of jocks with you, but clearly not.
Well, he'd set an overnight bag. I packed an overnight bag. But thankfully, we had a lot of kit anyway that was issued to you at the time, so it may do. I didn't make the same mistake when I was coming back after Christmas.
There was no time to think about it there. Like, that was just straight in. That must have been a culture
shock. You were straight
shock.
In. Oh, absolutely. Because, I mean, the first thing was we were all lined up on the square the following morning. Guy came along, haircut, 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 2 haircuts, 10 haircuts, and literally we were marched down to the barbers. They had a barber on site. We were marched out to the barbers, and one by one, everybody went in and basically head shaved, and that was the culture shock then, because it was like, okay, this is real. I'm actually doing this. But it was brilliant. I mean, I was up every morning at 5:30 or 6:00, PMAs out running the road. Like, at one stage, we were probably doing 17 miles a day.
Wow.
We did the half marathon in Cork the following year before we passed out in formation, almost 100 of us in sequence, which was fantastic. But yeah, brilliant. And then started my sea career then the following year. We passed out in April, probably joined the ship in around June. And that was the start of my kind of adventures going to sea then. So I got to relive that silhouette moment and with the moon and the dark sky on many occasions, and it's such a peaceful and tranquil place, really good for the mind sometimes.
Cove is a beautiful spot. It. Coming out there, you see the ships just coming out through Cove, and it's just it's beautiful. Yeah. You said something very interesting there about discipline. You said that discipline was in you. So when you went to the Navy, what happened? As in, like, did that discipline just come out? Did they instill it in you? Do you think that's innate in people, or do you think that's learned?
Well, I think everybody has the ability to be disciplined. I mean, what I meant was discipline was in me, like when I kind of transversed into my kind of second career, that the stuff that you pick up in the military, whilst sometimes it's not being drilled into you that you have to do this, you're innately picking up stuff all the time that is disciplining you in a way that stands to you down the road. And I noticed that hugely when I started my kind of second career as a CEO. But I think everybody has that innate ability to be disciplined. It's a choice, Gary. I mean, there is nothing in the world that anybody can say or do to you that can make you do anything or feel anything or, you know, just be anything other than yourself, because we're the only ones to have the ability to choose. So you can choose to do something, or you can not to choose to do it. You can choose to read a book, you can choose not to read a book. You can choose to sit in front of the TV for 6 hours, you can choose not to do it and go for a run. So it basically comes down to that. And the discipline element of it, for me anyway, is just to rubber stamp that. So when you make the choice to do it, okay, now you have to do this consistently for the next 5 days. That's the discipline part of it for me. And that really helped me. The Navy definitely helped me from that standpoint.
21 years, that's a considerable chunk of time at anything. So what happened in those first kind of couple of years? Like, because clearly you just took to it.
Yeah, and I loved it. Really did. I think for me, probably I was being told what to do a lot of the time. You have to go here, you have to be here, and you be there. And it was systematic, you know, like it was just done. I was very, very fortunate actually on my first ship, the Etna. I was very friendly with, and I got on with a lot of people. I mean, the one thing about the Navy is you're lumped in on the ship with like 60, 70 or 80 people. So if you're 300 miles off the West Coast, you can't hold a grudge, you know what I mean? And if you do, you get out of the system very quickly and move on, because that guy can be pulling you out of the fucking water, excuse my French, the day after, you know? And you want him to pull you out, you know? Because, no, I'll leave you there for a few more minutes, Andy. You know, like, so, I mean, you can never hold a grudge. But again, it goes back to that, like my time in the hotel. Just the politics of dealing with people, and I mean politics in a very, very kind of nice way, not nasty, is that, you know, you understand characters very, very quickly, or you get to read people very, very quickly. What sets him off now? What pokes him? Like what gets him in a good mood? Okay, when do I talk to him first thing in the morning, or will I leave it to live at 11 o'clock after he's had his coffee?
Yeah, I like this.
So it's just understanding people. And I think that's a skill in the hospitality industry that probably a lot of people in the hospitality industry take for granted. Mm. But I mean, one that I really cherish and one that I really understood the value of later on, like in my time in the Navy. And then I actually got an apprenticeship. So I applied for an electrical apprenticeship while I was at sea. They came up internally every year within the Naval Service, and I was actually fortunate enough to get my trade. So like 4 years on after that, kind of, it was like cherry on the cake. At that stage, I was delighted with myself. So back to college, did all my exams, passed with flying colors, and that was the start of it then. So that kind of gave me the grow for the education part of it again, just to get back into it. So I did lots of other little kind of small courses along the way, but I always felt at least in a year or a 12-month period, try and do something that's going to benefit you in some way, whether it be personally or educationally or career-wise. And I've kind of fell through that. I probably got more and more better at it, like in terms of pushing myself, the demands on myself to do more, and not for the want of being brilliant or the want of being special or anything like that, but just for myself. Because I felt I kind of let myself down. And not so much of it was a choice, obviously, I had to make the time, but I definitely could have done better in school. I could have got more out of it. So it was my second bite of the cherry. So I definitely wanted to really kind of grasp it with both hands. And I think I've done that.
What did you do in the Navy? Because I think it's one of the things we all know it exists, and we all know, we see it on the news or whatever. What were you doing? What was your kind of typical, say, year? Where were you and what were you doing?
Oh, you could be anywhere. So like when you go to sea, you get posted to a ship for 2 years. So you basically go wherever that ship goes for 2 years. Now, at the time, fishery protection for us was the main thing, drug interdiction. We would have been involved in a lot of that. Salmon patrols for the illegal salmon fishing. So that would be the majority of your kind of year spent doing that. And you could be literally anywhere, like 9 times out of 10, you were kind of 200 or 300 miles off the West Coast, or anywhere between kind of 20 miles and out. A typical day, like when I was a seaman before I got my trade, so you'd be on those rolling 4-hour watches I was telling you about, which I always say the Navy definitely screwed up my sleeping pattern, but maybe I just, my mother never sleeps, so maybe it was in the genes anyway. I'm just probably blaming the Navy. But you'd be 4 hours on, 8 hours off, and they'd be rolling constantly. So you'd be on that roster maybe for, we'd say, Monday to Friday. But if the ship anchored somewhere in that period, that can you moved on to the next one. So your typical day watch would be 8 to 12, and then you'd be a day worker. So you just kind of do your different chores then during your other day, your other hours. You finish at 4 o'clock, have dinner at 6, and then you'd be back on your watch then at 8 o'clock in the evening until 12 o'clock midnight. And you do that consistently until the ship would anchor or go alongside somewhere. So when it anchors, then you go to the next watch, which would be the 12 to 4. So you get up in the morning at 8, you do your chores, whatever tasks you had to do, and you go and watch at 12 until 4 o'clock. And you come off then for your 4 hours, finish off your work. You have 4 hours free time then, maybe a bit of rest or whatever, and you're back up at 8 o'clock on watch until 12 midnight. And then if you anchor and go alongside someone again, you go to the next watch, would be the 4 to 8. And then that was the kind of the crappy one, because you were off from 4 in the morning, or 12 to 4, and then 4 to 8. So and systematically it went along like that. Then when I got my trade, you become what's called a day worker, which is, it sounds great, but really when you're 200 miles off the West Coast, it doesn't really matter. You can be called at any time. So typical morning, you'd be up again, up at 7:30, start at 8. And you'd be doing planned maintenance, scheduled maintenance, whatever. And basically, as an electrician on a ship, you're doing anything from changing a light bulb in the toilets to stripping down a motor in the engine room, and everything in between. So that's kind of like that. That was it. And then you kind of do your rotations from ship to shore, and you go up the ranks. Then so you get promoted, you go to the next rank, then you go back to sea again. At that rank, you kind of learn the trades. So probably like my first kind of introduction to leadership was probably in the Defence Forces, which and the Navy. Obviously, as when I got promoted to which would be a corporal in the Army, it's an LS in the Navy, leading seaman, or leading EA in my case as an electrician. That would be my kind of first experience of managing people. So any of the apprentices that were out, that would be you'd be their first kind of point of contact, and then the petty officer would be my point of contact, and so on. And that was good because that was, I never had to tell anyone what to do or show them or encourage them or train them or bring them along. But I found that kind of really, really good as well. I would consider myself a people person. So that kind of felt like a natural thing for me to be able to show somebody what to do. And that was enjoyable. Yeah, definitely.
And at what stage then did you, because 21 years is a damn long time.
It isn't, Gary. It is when you say it, but actually I always use Steve Jobs' analogy, like when he says, like, you never see the dots joining forward, but when you join them and look going back, like I'm almost 17 years into my second career. Like, so it's 21 years, it seems long. It went in a blink. It really did. Like,
it sounds like you enjoyed it as well. I think that's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Yeah, absolutely. And I would do it again in the morning if I was an 18 year old and somebody said, "Navy, sign me up."
Yeah, it's a great indication of someone that you make the best of it, no matter what you're doing.
Isn't that what life is about?
Yeah.
You make the best of everything. Like, I mean, you're presented with situations and choices all the time.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what we said there a minute ago. Like, it's you that has the ability. You're the one that decides whether to do something or not. That's, nobody else does that for you.
How do you go from 21 years in the Navy to a group of companies? Tell me that story, because you told me a little bit last week and I was telling my wife about it this morning. It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I hear people say an incredible story, but there's guys that have done it and are doing it all the time. I never in a month of Sundays would have thought I was ever going to be running a company or a group of companies ever while I was in the Navy. But I always said when I joined that I would do my 21 and that I would do other things then, because I think it's like anything else. If you're there until you're 60, you become institutionalized, or if you do 31 years or 35 years or 40 years, you're institutionalized then into that culture, and it's very hard to make a break. And the people do it, absolutely. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it does make it difficult. So I always said I'd do my 21. So I would have been involved with PDFORA, which was the representative association for the defense forces. I got elected to assistant health and safety officer at national level. So I would have to go to Dublin once a month just for national meetings and brief the guys on any issues that were going on in the barracks, the aerodromes or the naval base. And I really enjoyed it, but I had no qualification in it. So you have guys ringing you up and saying, "Andy, listen, we're building an extension in the barracks there. There's a couple of guys breaking down the fence. Do we need signage or what do we have to do?" I said, "Look, guys, I don't know, but I'll find out for you." So I used to go off and research, get them all the information and send it off to them. Mm. And I kind of said to the general secretary one day, I said, "Look, Gary, I really should have some kind of course that I should, you know, feel that I can give or impart advice that I actually know what I'm talking about." So he said, "Look, have a look and see what's out there." So I went off and looked, and there was a certificate in health and safety. So I went off and did that and really enjoyed it. And I said, "You know, actually, maybe I'll go off and do the diploma, because that'd be something to do." So by night then, I did the diploma in UCC and loved it. And then I kind of said, "You know, actually, maybe this is something that I might like to do when I finish up." So that would have been about, I think I qualified in 2003. And I would have been working then on different projects for the Naval Service and for PDFORA on health and safety issues and stuff, which was good training for me as well. I mean, doing risk assessments on a ship with explosives and ammunition was a pretty good learning curve. But it was good. I really enjoyed it. And 2004, then I kind of had my eye in the door then for 2006 when I would have been retiring. And I said, "Look, I'm going to give it a go." And I set up my health and safety business then. And basically, from there, it was like very haphazard. It was like a half day here, a Saturday morning there, with guys that I knew that had moved on from the Navy and started out electrical companies and construction companies. And said, "Look, Andy, will you come in and have a look at our risk assessments or see how we're doing?" And kind of got a feel for it. And I said, "You know what? This is actually not bad. I actually kind of enjoyed it, and I'm enjoying this." So I remember chatting to my wife, Mary, and I said, "Look, I think this will be really, really doable. If I do 2 or 3 days a week of the consultancy and the pension," I said, "you know, that will give me a chance to keep an eye on the boys and stuff, and, you know, take the pressure off your mother and stuff," because her mother was doing a lot of the child mining for us. And she still to this day will just poke me every now and then, whatever happened to that 2 day a week, 3 day a week scenario. I'm probably working harder now than I ever worked. But by 2006 came around to actually retire, we probably had 5 or 6, maybe 7 consistent clients that were coming back for regular stuff, and probably another 10, 15, 20 clients that would pop in maybe once a year for stuff, update stuff. So I said, "Yeah, we're going to be fine." And I'm a Dundalk man, Gary. I'm not proud. I'd have swept the shelves and floors and super value if I had to. So it didn't bother me. So, and it was nice having the safety net, knowing the pension was there and the mortgage was covered and we're not going to be chucked out in the street. But it was still a gamble because I was coming out of something that I did for 21 years that was a really, really good support network. You knew hail, rain or snow, economies up and down, like you're in the defense forces, you're getting paid every week. Your bills are going to be paid. The mortgage is going to be paid. So, but look, I was enjoying it and I give it a lash. And then, yeah, it just kind of took off from there. So I took on my first employee in 2007. I moved to the office because the toy room that I was occupying here, and I call it the toy room because it was literally where the two guys used to have all their toys. There was so many folders in there. There was actually more folders than toys. So I said, okay, this is time to get a small bit more real now. And again, I was working all hours of the night. My wife would often say, look, I'm just nipping down to my mum's. I'll be back in an hour. She'd be back and gone to bed. And I'd still be on the computer at 2 o'clock in the morning and trying to get up at 5:30 or 6 to head toward to be on site. So that's the worst thing about having the office at home. Probably a topic of conversation for remote working as well, because people tend to put in more hours than they think. But I said, to have some kind of a structure, I said, I need to get out of here. So I rented a little office in Mayfield with €700 a month. And I went to Mary and said, €700 a month, are you going to be able to do? Yeah. I was going to go, oh, it'll be grand. Look, it'll be fine. She goes, I know, but it's €700. I'm doing it anyway. I said, because at least when I turn the key in the office, whether it's 5:30, 7:00, 9:00, I'm done till the morning.
Yeah, you're there. Yeah.
Fast forward now, once technology has taken completely over, and you're never done.
Full circle. You're back again in the toy room.
But the philosophy was right. No, I was thinking, okay, at least there's a bit of structure in it anyway. And yeah, took on our first employee in the following year, Trish, who was the office manager. Basically showed me the lesson of taking people on when you need to take them on, because I was doing literally everything. Yeah. I was invoicing, I was editing, I was doing the work. I was just ridiculous stuff, kind of doing the business development and just having somebody to take the phone calls, get your list of messages. I've invoiced this, that's in the bank. It was brilliant. And something that kind of stood to me along the line then, saying, look, yeah, okay, if you're getting stretched, you need to have a look. Do we need somebody? What are they going to do? What's their role going to be? And so on and so forth.
How did that jump happen though, Andy? Because what I found really interesting about your story was, oh, I'll just do 2 days a week. And you were still doing the other job as well, which I found really interesting, is that overlap. And it just goes to reinforce the point. There's no one way of starting. Everyone feels like it's been glamorized to like, oh, just burn the boats and go for it helter skelter. And you must be turning over massive money in your first year. It just reinforces the point. There's no one way to start a business. But how did you go then from those 2 days a week, you know, yourself just in the toy room, to hiring your first employee? Like, where did those, you touched on earlier about your first clients coming from people you knew. So is that where you tapped into that network? Is that how you grow? Because I think that's the crunch that a lot of people get stuck on. Oh, I have this great idea. I just don't know where my customers are.
Yeah, I think that's actually a very, very good question, Gary. So I'll go back to 2004. So when I actually set up the business, I was still in the Navy, as I said. I got introduced to BNI, which is a business network group. And I went along to it and I kind of just got it straight away. It was like a table of all select businesses. Mm. No one category was the same and they helped out each other. So I was kind of saying, okay, this is people getting on with people. This is the kind of typical stuff that you would have in business, is know, like, and trust. And people like doing business with people that they know, like, and trust. So it goes back to my days in the hotel, how you treat people, how you get on with people, how you work with people, always pays it forward. And I'll give you an example of that in a minute. So I joined BNI while I was still in the Navy. So I used to get up at 6:00, head in for 6:30, do my BNI meeting on a Wednesday morning, and helter skelter down to the hall bowling for 9:00, so that I wasn't going to be affecting any of the work that needed to be done. But that was invaluable. I mean, the training that I got in that, just in terms of how to present yourself, how to do your 60-second pitch, that was phenomenal for me. I mean, that was just kind of mind-changing for me, because it was just showing you how to present to people in a different way. Because not everybody is like you. Like, there is people from all walks of life, and you're pitching people from all walks of life. So that was brilliant. So I definitely got probably 4 or 5 fantastic contracts out of people keeping an eye out. You know, like, somebody says, safety, I've got a really good guy, actually, I can introduce you to him. And that's worth his weight in gold. So when I seen that kind of building, then I kind of said, okay, networking is very important. That was generating the sales, that was generating business. But it came to a point where I physically couldn't do it all myself. And the 2 days a week then, you know, it wasn't 2 days a week. It quickly transgressed into 5 days a week and probably half day on a Saturday and maybe an hour or two on a Saturday evening, having your glass of wine, just getting the last few invoices out before you typically took a rest day on a Sunday. I always tried not to work on a Sunday. But I mean, when I started off, you have to do the hours. I mean, I was a manual handling trainer as well. So I'd often do training on Saturday morning. There was an extra gig. You knew you were getting paid straight away because it was cash and delivery for the training. Mm. So that money was in the bank then from 1 a.m. So any bills that needed to be done. But then when you're doing everything, you quickly realize that you can't do everything. And if you think you can do everything, and everybody does, everybody thinks, oh no, look, yeah, it's a bullet that everybody has to fucking take at some stage because you just burn yourself out. You will just feel, I mean, I was probably doing that. I remember going to my doctor and he said, geez, your blood pressure's all over the shop. But I was like rushing around the place like a madman, eating rolls in the car and driving down. They're like getting to one side to another, getting to the next client. And you think you're doing fantastic, but you're really, you're burning both ends of the string, and eventually it meets in the middle. And we all know what happens then, you know? So I took a kind of strategic view on it then. I said, look, no, I've got to make a decision here now. I moved to the office, that's fine. Carried on for a while. I said, right, I need help. And the natural progression for me then at that point was to get somebody in to manage the invoicing, manage all the phone calls, any emails that were coming in, to just take the pressure off me, to give me the time to actually work on the project stuff. Mm. And within probably 4 or 5 weeks, Gary, I noticed that my efficiency then increased because I was getting work done on time. I wasn't making mistakes. I actually looked at a couple of documents that I did probably 6 months down the line, and I seen time was in it that probably the client never even read anyway. But I mean, to me, I was going, Jesus, that's desperate. Like, but that linked back to that period when I was kind of stretching myself too much. Mm. And you can burn bridges as well doing that. I mean, if you do a really bad job, people will tell people way quicker about a bad job than they will about a good job.
That's true.
You know, and that's an innately Irish thing.
Yeah, definitely.
we love the negativity.
Yeah. 50 good but, jobs, one bad job. And that's
absolutely, yeah. You're only as good as your last job. I mean, and it is true. Yeah. Definitely in Ireland anyway. But yeah, Trish coming aboard that time was brilliant. And then the next point after that then was, okay, I need another consultant because I can't physically get to do all the work. And I was working with a guy from Dublin, a company in Dublin that I was introduced to, on a couple of projects in Cork. And we were getting on really well. Business was going really well. And he rang me up one Sunday evening and says, Andy, I have good news and bad news here. And I goes, Jesus, Dominic.
It's the worst possible start to any conversation.
Absolutely. On a Sunday evening, I said, I knew there was something up anyway. But I said, go on, give me the bad news, Dominic. And he goes, listen, he said, I'm after getting a job, he said, so I'm leaving Synergy. And I said, oh God, Beck. So we're just building the relationship. He goes, no, he says, the good news is now, he said, I've gone to one of the biggest multinationals as our security and safety manager. And he said, I'd like you to come and do some work for me. And that was this, okay, different level again. Now, I can't say who the company is now, but I think most people will probably guess who it is. But
everyone's going to your LinkedIn right now.
Yeah. Who did he work for? But yeah, one of the biggest kind of tech companies out there now at the moment from a web perspective. But that transformed the business. I mean, then I did a small project for him. It was about $5,500 to get everything 100% pristine. They put a budget in place for 12. They said, look, we might need an extra few jobs. Like a 12 grand project for me was brilliant. I mean, and there's the security of knowing that that was being invoiced every month. It was just like, that was my first kind of big kind of retainer kind of project. And the following 2 or 3 years, then I was auditing every one of our sites in Europe. So it went from like 12 grand to 80 grand. But what that did, and it exposes you to other people who I got on with and worked with and was working in projects with them. They subsequently moved to different companies. So Dominic's 2IC moved to another huge social media company that we ended up managing a project in Sweden for 3 years to the tune of probably maybe 300,000 or 400,000 when everything was included, all the services. And again, it just exposed you to more people, and other people moved to different companies. One of the guys was Airbnb, and we did some stuff for them. The other guys were in Twitter, we did some stuff for them. So the company was just transforming all the time. And then in 2014, we were working on an internal training platform for the company to give me my first break with a team in California. And their manager was a really, really nice guy. I got on really well, but he said, look, Andy, he said, I've got two guys here. They're contractors. He said, I don't particularly get on with the company that they're managing. I don't think they look after them well enough. He said, would you be interested in managing their contracts? And I remember Steve said, if I'm not a project resourcing company or a recruitment company, we don't do that. You know, it's just environmental health, safety, consultancy and training, and that's what we're good at. Mm. And he goes, have a think about it. So that was Christmas 2014, probably second week in December. And I remember, I think I was telling you, one of my younger brothers passed away two days before Christmas that year. And I remember I was sitting in his house with one of my younger brothers having a drink just in his memory, saying, what would he do? And my brother Robert says, he said, bro, he said, you know you want to do it. I mean, you can totally do it. And he said, Wayne would probably kick your arse if you didn't do it. So it was kind of like, I knew I wanted to do it, but it was kind of that little bit of reassurance that I was doing the right thing. Because it's, again, it's that ability to choose. Like, I could choose to leave it and just run the health and safety company and be quite happy doing that, or just stretch myself another little bit now and say, I could give it a go. So I said, fuck, can we give it a go? And yeah, 6 years on, we've turned Mac and Talent, well, it was just Mac and Consultancy at the time, turned it to Mac and Talent, from probably turning over $300,000 to just under $16.5 million last year. 150 people globally. We're now in Ireland, the UK, Switzerland, Hong Kong, Shanghai, Vancouver, and 7 states in America, 11 cities.
That's just bananas, Andy, to be very honest.
So that's how we have two groups. That's how we came to have a group, Gary.
I have a lot of work to do. Like, that's just bananas, Andy, right? Like, to scale that quickly, even just as you're saying the locations there, it must be a bit surreal for you. Like, to have scaled that fast. How did you mentally scale that fast? Because, you know, you're obviously a very humble dude. And you start off 2 days a week and then just will hire one person. How do you make that leap? Because that bridge is colossal.
Well, I suppose the difference for me was when I said yes to Steve, I probably wholeheartedly didn't know what I was saying yes to, other than I was just going to be managing these two guys, that I was going to invoice this company every month, and I was going to get paid every month for looking after them. And 80 grand profit at the end of the year would seem like a pretty good deal. Like, if you had said to me then, or like, Andy, like, fast forward 5 years time now, like, you'll have 120 contractors globally all over the world, and your company would be 150 people, and you'd be in 7. I'd have just locked me up and taken me away. Like, I couldn't do that. Absolutely couldn't.
Yeah.
We set up a Regis office in San Jose, so that kind of took apart the element of the company. Did all the registrations, and one of the guys actually that was going to come on with me, Tim, became like my kind of manager on the ground there. So like, you had to have a US citizen, you know, we had to have a US citizen involved to get our business number and stuff. And then Tim actually never managed to come across at all. He got a full time job with another company. He moved on, but he had recommended another two guys within that company to come over to Mac. So they did. Like, so 2015, I had probably at the end of 2015, I had three employees. Like I said, probably 350, maybe 400,000 turnover. And it was fine. I mean, like, I was managing that from Ireland. I was popping over once a year or twice a year to meet Steve and just make sure everything was going okay. And I was kind of like living the dream. It was great. Yeah, you know,
it sounds like it.
Actually, this is easy stuff. She jumping an Aer Lingus flight in the economy at the time. There was no business for me at that stage. And so I was delighted. I'd go to San Francisco. Here we come. Like, you know, so it was fabulous. And then the following year, I probably had the three guys for probably the best part of a year and a half, maybe. It was probably towards the end of, or middle of 2016, I got an introduction to the global facilities manager for Oculus ARVR. And that just changed everything. They were looking to take on, we were doing a project for them here in Cork, for some project work in London and Zurich. And I was in a meeting with this guy one day, and he said, oh, there's a phone call coming in, can you just give me 2 seconds? And I said, no problem. So I jumped down, he took the call, and he said, yeah, look, we're taking on three health and safety people now. He said, oh, I said, that's brilliant. So we'll have a team now. He said, because I was a contractor just trying to support them. And he goes, yeah, but I've got no vendor to support them. And he goes, what do you mean? And he goes, I said, we have to, these are contractors, so we're not taking them on full time. And I said, look, I've got a small company in the US. There's only three people in it. I said, I can certainly help you out. I said, but look, that's not what we do. You know, it's we're environmental health and safety, consultancy and training. We're not a project resourcing company. He said, no, fantastic. Can you give me 2 minutes? So I had to jump out of the meeting again. He's on the phone, call me back, and he goes, okay, this is what I want to pay them. You put in your numbers. I want your figures by the end of the day. He said, I've got to head to Zurich tomorrow. I said, no problem. So sent it in. He said, email me when he got to Zurich. Done. He said, that's fine. First guy will be starting in December, second two in January 2017. And so that my little small company in the US went from 3 to 6. And we plodded along then for the next couple of months. And subsequently after that, he sent another 16 people to me in 2017. So we went from probably doing in 2016, probably 1.9 million to doing, I think it was 4.4 in 2017, 6.5 in 2018, and then 11.1 in 2019, and then 2020, because it's just under 16 million, 16 and a half million dollars.
They're phenomenal jumps. You seem to be of the school of say yes and figure it out as we go. It seems to be of that, embrace the challenge and figure out the solution.
Yeah, and I think as you, and just to go back to your point a while ago, there is no one scenario fits all in running a business or starting a business. If there's any young budding entrepreneur or any person out there thinking of starting a business, just start the business. That's the simple, like, it's just, don't look at the mountain, just look at the first step. Or don't look at the top of the stairs, just look at the first step. Just start the business. If starting the business is registering a company for €300 or whatever, register the company. If you don't do it with it for 6 months, don't worry about it. You've taken the first step. But yeah, I guarantee you, when you take the first step, you'll want to take the second step. And then just take the second step. You're right. I mean, it's glamour. It's probably glamorized to death over centuries of, oh, you have to do this and you have to do that. Now, this is just my experience, of course. I'm not an all singing, all dancing guru on business. I'm far from it. I've still loads to learn. But I think initially it is just take the step. Like, don't be waiting for, oh, I need to have €100 in the bank, or I need to have $1,000 in the bank, or 1,000 yen in the bank, or I need to have at least 3 customers before I can call this a business. Just start the business.
I love,
because
that,
if you're waiting for the if, ats, buts, and cans, you'll never start a business.
That's the only thing I say to people, to be honest. That's all I got in my locker. That's all I say when people ask me anything. Just start. Just start.
Gary, that's probably the best news. That's the only thing you're imparting to people. It's the best advice they're getting, I can
because
tell you.
I've talked to hundreds of people now, hundreds. And this is why I love doing the podcast, and I love doing it long form, because I feel there's too many sound bites. There's too many social media clips. There's too many quip of the day. Oh, the one thing you need to do. And there are principles, which we're going to jump onto now, and routines and habits, but there's no one route. A friend of mine asked me the other day, what's it like being an entrepreneur during COVID? It's like, imagine you're wearing a blindfold. Imagine it's dark. And exactly, I said, the only thing I can do is just walk, and I'm just walking. And he's like, that makes sense. I was like, that's it. Because if I stop walking in 9 months' time, when the economy comes back, or whenever everything's open, I'm now 10 miles further on than I would have been if I just stood there and just waited and panicked and procrastinated. I was like, baby steps, just one step, one step, one step, one step. I might be going the exact right direction, but I'm going in a direction. So exactly, I couldn't re-emphasize that more for people who are listening. It's just start, because it'll look nothing like you think. And you're a perfect example. It'll be 2 days a week. Don't worry, we'll just do a little bit of part-time. And now look, a global company, a group of companies with offices all over the world. So it's just one day at a time.
Speaking of one day at a time,
I really want to dig into your discipline and routines and your daily habits, because this is just an area I think is so important right now, and I just love geeking out on it. So tell me your kind of daily and weekly routines.
Okay, so this is something that I've probably bought into more and more as the business has grown and grown. So I would have been always a good riser. Like I said, the Navy definitely messed up my sleeping patterns, so I don't sleep a lot, which is a good thing. But I would have just stayed in bed and I'm not getting up at freaking ridiculous o'clock in the morning if I don't need them. But subsequently, as you follow different successful people and watch them and look at their habits, they change their routines. And then you say, okay, look, if everybody else is doing this and they're doing that and they're up here, there must be something in that. And it took me a couple of years to get my head around why they were doing it. And I'm still getting my head around it, but definitely routine is key, Gary. So like, I mean, I probably would have been normal day would have been kind of 6, 7 o'clock, get up, have breakfast, start at 8 and off you go. Now it would look like probably anywhere between 5 and 5:30 getting up. I meditate for 15, 20, 25 minutes, depending on what I'm listening to. I read for 30 minutes. So I put a reading slot in my calendar every day, Monday to Friday, and I read for 30 minutes. I think I was telling you last week, I did one book a month for 12 months last year challenge, because prior to that, I would have never really read, I mean, maybe 2 or 3 books probably in the previous 5 or 6 years. And I just feel that like the more you learn, the more stuff you can get into your brain that's positive, inspirational, motivational, it just helps. Mm. Like it just gives you the little edge. And I've definitely seen the value of last year, even coming into this year. So I read for 30 minutes. Like I said, something positive, inspirational or motivational. I will go for my run then. So I'll do anywhere between 3 and 3.5 and 5K. I'm just doing 3.5 at the moment because it's still quite dark in the mornings at that hour. So I use the street lights to guide me home. But normally I do kind of 5K out to Waterloo Church and back. And then that sets you up kind of mentally, I think, for the day. I come back then, I check in on emails with Hong Kong and Shanghai, and then have a bit of breakfast, and then hit the office then between 9 and 9:30, depending if I might do 1 or 2 meetings here. Now at the moment, obviously with COVID, we did a lot of that. But yeah, I get to the office then, and it's work then. Schedule is fairly full, and lunch as normal. I try to take the hour, doesn't always work, but I generally will not take less than 30 minutes, because mm-hmm. it's important that you actually take that break. You come back a little bit fresher. And then back again, and I'll be probably here in the office until maybe 5:30, 6:30. I'll come home, have dinner, a couple of meetings with the US, but I'll be on the laptop on and off probably until around 10:30.
Okay. And then you balance that off. You have a schedule.
A typical Monday to Friday. Yeah. And then again, 15, 20, 25 minutes before I go to bed, I'll meditate again just to get the brain kind of calmed down, get the monkey brain relaxed so that you're going to bed tired, but not, you know, like not exhausted, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But like when I get into bed, I have this kind of routine that I just lie on my back for 5 or 10 minutes, and I just go through the really nice things that happen during the day, things that I'm thankful and grateful for. Again, with gratitude wouldn't be the big thing that I've ever done before, but it just gives you a different perspective. For like when you sit back and relax and you say, okay, what went well today? What were the good wins today? What am I thankful for? Like, I mean, okay, I live in a beautiful house, I've got a lovely family, I've got a great business, things are going well. It drags your mind away from there was 67 deaths, there's only freaking 2,000 people gets you away from all that crap. Yeah. You know what I mean?
And that's interesting, because I think a lot of people are struggling with that at the minute. You know, the panic porn, just the misery news of just like people are immersed in it. They just can't get away from it. They just become obsessed with stuff that's so beyond their control. It's interesting you mentioned meditation, because that keeps coming up as a trait. And I'm the same as yourself. I study people. What is their daily habits? What is their routines? Because show me their habits, I'll show you where they're going. Like that old cliche is so true, because what you do consistently yields its results over years. So that meditation. Absolutely. When did you start meditating?
Probably about 1.5 years ago, Gary. I would consider him a mentor. A guy called Darren Hardy in the States. He was the owner and success of Success Magazine in the States for over 25 years. So he's interviewed and published articles on probably all the top billionaires, multimillionaires, like. He's interviewed them all. So he has an innate ability to kind of relay simple term business tips, having spoken to these guys, studied them, worked with their companies, and he imparted the knowledge like on a daily basis. So, I mean, I take that in regularly. But he kind of made the point at one stage, he said, look, the difference between, and it obviously goes back to like that 3% that holds 90% of the resource of the world. Like, what are they doing differently than everybody else? Yeah. He said, there's nothing wrong with everybody else, but he said, if you want to go into that category, what are they doing? And he said, meditation was huge. They all reflected. They all practiced gratitude. They all meditated, and meditation in different forms. Some of them just sat in a room with nothing, just quietness for 15 or 20 minutes. Some of them listened to music. Some of them listened to sounds. Some of them listened to voices. But he said the common trend was meditation. So I said, if that's what it is, I'm going to give it a go. So I downloaded one or two apps started with kind of 5 or 10 minutes, just going into one of the rooms below in the house, lock the door, turn the light off, lay down on the ground and speakers in and just listen to it. And I found after probably about a month, maybe a month and a half, I was just that little bit calmer after coming out of it. I kind of had any little bit of negative energy that might have been there. Like, I wouldn't be typically a negative person, but any of that negative noise that's out there, like that would be floating around in your head, was kind of just filtering away. So I said, yes, there must be something in this. So naturally then, to be consistent, I just upped it and went to 15 minutes, went to 20 minutes. And I'm comfortable now, like anywhere between 15, 25, maybe even 30 minutes, depending on what I'm listening to, is a good slot. And I enjoy it. It just brings that element of calm.
What would your one piece of advice be to yourself before you started off on the business journey? You've just left the Navy. What would the one piece of advice be to your younger self before you started?
Just believe in yourself. I think in Ireland, like, we're a negative nation by DNA, and I don't know what is that. It's the old 800 years of repression, and we obviously feel we're downtrodden and stood on, but we always transcend to the negative. I mean, like, you see it on the motorways, like people slowing down to take selfies, like, of car crashes.
It's bizarre.
And they don't mind holding up traffic for 5 or 6 miles down the road. Like, they don't think, but it's the knock-on effect that it has. So, I mean, it's like listening to negative news. It doesn't have an impact straight away when you listen, unless it's absolutely shocking. But if you listen to that consistently 5 days a week, or 6 or 7 times a day, 5 days a week, or 7 days a week, it's going to have an effect, because it does shift your perspective on how you look at things. So if you're in any way kind of negative or low or kind of drop, that's going to have a huge impact. So when I go back to what you said earlier on, but that guy you were chatting with, it's had an impact on a huge amount of people in this country at the moment. I mean, people are living for the numbers. Like, I mean,
it's bizarre.
I mean, we don't talk about the weather anymore. I mean, the Irish thing was, we always talked about the weather. Now we're talking about COVID numbers. Like, yeah, did you hear how many died this week? Like, it's bizarre stuff.
I know people who get the alerts to their phone every day at 6 o'clock.
Oh, I did. Yeah, I actually downloaded that COVID app to check in. I actually deleted it about 4 or 5 months ago. I said, no, this is ridiculous. Like,
you've no control. Like, just look after yourself, look after your family, do everything you should do. Don't put people at risk. And outside of that, there's very little you can do. I stopped watching the news. I stopped watching TV, full stop. I don't listen to the radio anymore.
I don't buy the newspaper.
On a Sunday?
Maybe once every now and then.
Yeah, every Sunday I buy two papers on a Sunday, read through them, and that does me. That gives me the broad scope of what's happening in the world, so I'm not completely ignorant. And then the rest is, it'll find me. If I need to know, it'll find me. And I talk to people. I talk to people like yourself. I talk to people who I respect and who I think, right, I need to figure out what they're doing. And again, it's never the tiny stuff. It's always the macro stuff that you need to focus on, the kind of longer term. What you hear in the news is not going to impact your day, except negatively. What one book? You've read 12 in the last month, and I think that's a great challenge to do, actually, is that 12 for 12, because you get time to digest them as well. I was terrible for just speed reading. I'd read, and then not be able to tell you 2 weeks later what was the key messages. So I've slowed down my reading. What one book would you recommend people to read that's had an impact on you?
The favorite one for last year, and probably the one that had the most impact, was Darren Hardy's book, The Compound Effect. Because it's about consistency. It's about doing, like he uses the analogy, no matter who you're up against, what you're doing, what your business is, if you're consistent over time, you will win the race every time. It's the rabbit and the hare.
Yeah.
Like, the rabbit and the tortoise, I beg your pardon. Yeah. Yeah. Just consistent over time. And it was his analogy about the stairs. Like, don't be looking at the big stairs. Just first step. Just take the first step. And then when you look back at the end of the year, I mean, I did last year, and I go, geez, I just read 12 books. But like, it's so doable. I mean, that 30 minutes doesn't sound a lot. But if you do that consistently every month for a year, I just read 12 books that I never would have got the opportunity to read.
It's super advice, and it's great, especially.
So yeah, The Compound Effect, definitely. Yeah. It's a very simplistic book, Gary. It's a nice size text. It's not too small. You don't have to strain your eyes, but there's little nuggets of gold in there, just in, and yeah, like just the consistency. It's just about consistency. I can't emphasize that enough. But that's where discipline is key. It's making that consistency happen.
I love that. That's super advice. Andy, where can people learn a little bit more about yourself and about the Macken Group?
Oh, well, the Macken Group, if you log on to www.mackenconsultancy.com, you get access to both websites, the Talent or the EHS. You'll find me on LinkedIn. I think it's just Andy Macken at LinkedIn, so you should be able to find me there. Instagram, I only post every now and then. I try not to get too mapped up on the social media area, as much as it is key, but on the private side, I think it can be all consuming as well. One of the good tips I can give you is turn off the notifications as well. My productivity probably went up about 30% when I turned off my notifications on my phone about a year ago.
Yeah, it's huge. I leave my phone now in the kitchen when I'm not recording or when I'm doing deep work, just leave it in the kitchen. Just treat it like a landline.
Yeah. So there's loads of little nuggets like that in that compound effect book. Little small things like that just can make a huge difference.
Perfect. Andy, thank you so much for joining me today.
It was an absolute pleasure, Gary.
I hope you enjoyed that chat with Andy. As you can tell, he's one of the nicest people in business. So do connect with him. Do reach out. He is super, super helpful in terms of his whole business, in terms of what he does. So if you do have questions around that area, do please connect with him on LinkedIn. He is super responsive and he's just a good dude. I will see you back here next Monday for the new version of the Idea Lab.